behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Vingan, Nick Keyser here with you on a Wednesday evening. I hope you all have had a wonderful day. The Nashville Predators with a milestone win last night against the Vegas Golden Knights, the league leading at the time, Vegas Golden Knights. A 5-3 win at Bridgestone Arena. Win number 1,000 for the Nashville Predators franchise. I saw this today, Nick, according to the NHL. The Predators required the second fewest games to 1,000 wins in NHL history. 2,020 games played. They just missed the record. The Philadelphia Flyers reached 1,000 wins in 2018 games. So just two off the record. But an impressive performance from the Nashville Predators last night. They jump out to a 4-0 lead roughly midway through the second period. When it was 3-0, when Justin Barron scored his first goal as a member of the Nashville Predators, shots were 15-1 in favor of the Predators. The Golden Knights made a push. They got to within 4-3 late in the third period. I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Pavel Dorofeev.
Believe it's
Dorofeev.
Yes.
Pavel Dorofeev.
Good job.
With a hat trick. But Ryan O'Reilly with a late empty net goal. Predators win 5-3. And Nick, I'm sure a lot of Predators fans were watching that performance last night and thinking to themselves, where has this team been?
I know, right?
All season long. This is what we expected of the Nashville Predators this season. We all know that's not how it's turned out. But an impressive win against, as I said, the league-leading team in the NHL entering yesterday's action. So what did you make, Nick, of the Predators' performance last night?
Yeah, it was impressive from start to finish, I felt like. And that's just in terms of them winning a game, I would say, because the first and the third period were completely flipped scripts for either team. Nashville came out strong in the first period and really looked really good. And they only allowed what ended up being one shot. I remember seeing Jesse Granger saying two shots and Jack Eichel's shot not really counting there at the very end of the first period. But then Nashville had a very similar end to the game as well. The time of possession would be something I would like to know from the third period. You're going to pull it up. But that was an interesting thought to hear from Andrew Burnett talking about how his team was able to finish the game, but it may not have been pretty necessarily. That's kind of the vibe I got from him. That's not what he said verbatim or even, you know, similarly, but that's just the sense I got from even talking with Nick Blankenberg on our interview on 102.5 The Game just afterwards. And I thought it was interesting that Eustace Onanen was able to keep his cool as well, Adam. I thought he did a pretty admirable job making 19 saves. And he was cold pretty much the entire game until that third period. So I heard Coach Ben Vanderklok say, way to stay in it. And that was definitely evident down the stretch, Adam. And for the Predators to beat the Golden Knights, best team in the West at the time, and they just saw the Washington Capitals not that long ago either on Saturday. So for the Predators, you have to feel good about yourselves, but you also understand that you have to keep play up like this. And Steven Stamkos kind of talked about that last night too. And I wasn't in the scrum, but he talked about how I'm going to let you guys do the math. And so to the players, to Barry Trotz, to Andrew Burnett, this is about them just playing hockey and getting better day by day and game by game. But Adam, did you have that number with the puck possession?
So in the first period of the game yesterday, the Predators were incredibly dominant. Puck possession time, excuse me, offensive zone puck possession time in the first period was 2 minutes 12 seconds for the Predators, 33 seconds for the Golden Knights.
A grand 30 seconds.
Shots, slot shots on net, 7-0 in favor of the Predators. High danger scoring chances, 6-0 in favor of the Predators. As the game progressed, the Golden Knights closed the gap. But it was a dominant first half of the game for the Nashville Predators. And you mentioned some of the recent games they've played, Nick. These past three games they've played. The final game of the road trip at Winnipeg, one of the best teams in the league. A home game on Saturday against the now league-leading Washington Capitals. A game that, frankly, the Predators deserved to win, but they did not. The score was not reflective of the performance by the Predators, but they lose that game. And then the win against the Golden Knights. I wanted to see how the Predators performed in those three games. And although they lost two of three, I thought they played well in all three games. And our friend Willie Donick tweeted this morning that the Predators are 7-7-1 over their past 15 games against top competition. He mentioned since December 10th, the Predators' schedule has included a road game at the Stars, a road game at the Avalanche, two road games at the Jets, a road game at the Wild, home games against Carolina, Los Angeles, Washington, and Vegas. 12 of the last 15 teams, according to Willie, are in a playoff spot or are within 1 point of a playoff spot. The other three, the Rangers, the Penguins, and at the Blues on a day of game travel, the first game after the holiday break. So the Predators held their own against some of the top teams in the NHL. So will it matter in terms of playoff positioning and such? Probably not. It would take a statistical miracle for these Nashville Predators to make the playoffs. But if you're the Predators and you're looking at the rest of the season as sort of a, what's the word I'm looking for here, Nick? If you're looking at the rest of the season as, what are some of the things that we can build on as a team? Who are the players that could help us next season have the type of season we all expected them to have this season?
Right.
If you're looking at these past 15 games, as Willie did, mm-hmm. I'm specifically looking at these past three games.
Right.
There is a lot to be encouraged by. Now, as I said, is it going to help them this season? Probably not. But you do have to play more seasons. It's not just this season. Newsflash, everybody. And
life goes on.
Right. And I think that if the Predators can play these types of games, it could be encouraging as they try to rebound next season.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And one bit of digging that I did just to kind of add on top of Willie's report that he threw out there, I put in my article at thegamenashville.com yesterday, since the last homestand that started on December 17th up until now, which was before the game against the Golden Knights, the Preds have scored three or more goals in a game seven times, and they've gone 4-2-1, and obviously Willie furthered that case as well. And Nashville had more than 25 shots on goal in five of those contests, and I believe that they did last night as well. So that's interesting to kind of take more of a glance at. And also, I want to say that Eustace Onanen has had quite a bit to do with that as well at times, and I believe now he's 4-2-0 as a Nashville Predator. That was just his second home start last night against the Golden Knights, and he's done, like I said earlier, he's done a very admirable job. But I think what's a little bit more interesting to me, Adam, is, and I asked Andrew Burnett about how he has seen the spacing, how he has seen his forwards work together the last little bit here. And he's encouraged by it. And, you know, I wasn't trying to come at him as, you know, hey, I'm thinking that they're playing poorly. But the way that he phrased it was, no, I think that there is progress. And then he even told us as reporters as well, he's like, you guys probably think I'm crazy, but I really am seeing progress. And is it evident? Yes. Is it evident to the magnitude of some fans pleasing? Not completely, for sure. But I think what's interesting to me, too, is defensively, I feel like they've not been as great as they typically have been either. And I think it's been more evident with a couple of pieces out of the lineup as well. So we'll see how they do when they get Jeremy Lazan and Adam Willsby back. But I think overarchingly, Adam, it is interesting to see that against top competition, they have looked like the team that they have aspired to be all season long. So Can they keep doing it? I don't know. Are they fighting for their contracts and jobs next season? I think that's more of what you're looking at now, because if, you know, he's looking, if Barry Trotz is looking to add guys with a little bit of term, I'm curious to see who that might be going into the trade deadline and who might be on the chopping block as well.
Eustace Onanen, by the way, as a member of the Nashville Predators in 6 starts and 7 appearances, 4-2 with a .239 goals against average and .923 save percentage. Very impressive start for Eustace Onanen as a member of the Nashville Predators. Here's my best case scenario for the Predators this season. To go back off of what I was talking about before, I think you want to see them be competitive in every game, even if they lose. And as I said, they lost 2 of 3 in this 3-game stretch to Winnipeg and Washington, but they played well enough to win. They beat Vegas last night. So you want to see them be competitive in these games, but if it were up to me, they would still lose more than they would win, because you still want to put yourself in a position to have the best odds of winning the draft lottery.
Yeah,
at this point, you don't want them to completely, you know, fold up the tent and tank the rest of the season. They're not going to do that. But if they can play well and lose more often than they play well and win, that's honestly, that would be my vote, because you can be encouraged by the process, but you're still putting yourself in the best position to have a shot at the number one overall selection in the 2025 NHL draft. So the Predators win 5-3 against the Vegas Golden Knights last night. They will be back in action tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks, and we'll talk about the pregame ceremony, a very important pregame ceremony for the Nashville Predators on Thursday. We'll also look ahead to a spicy storyline in Saturday's game when the Minnesota Wild visit Bridgestone Arena. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, a really interesting report came out last weekend involving a prominent Predators player. We will discuss that next. Adam Vingan in with Nick Kieser tonight. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
Yes, Ryan O'Reilly, when he signed with the Predators before last season, Ron, he signed a 4-year deal. There was no protection in there, trade or no movement clause, nothing like that. And there's been some speculation this year, and I think the Predators have been called about O'Reilly, and the respect that he has across the league is so high, people want to know if he could be available. And here's what I understand the Predators are telling teams. They are saying he may not have protection language in his contract, but he is being treated as if he has a no-move clause. I think the Predators' preference is to keep him because they want him to win, especially when they start to put the pieces back together at the end of this year. And also, they see him as a leader on and off the ice. However, they are going to at least consider it under two conditions. Number one, the offer has got to be something that really excites them. It really has to be a great offer. And number two, it has to be something O'Reilly would agree to. And as far as I can tell at this point in time, I don't believe O'Reilly has indicated in any way, shape, or form he is looking to move. So with O'Reilly, it's something that really has to excite Nashville, and B, it would have to be something that he would be comfortable with if it gets to that point.
That was Elliot Freeman of Hockey Night in Canada last Saturday during the headline segment on the second intermission of Hockey Night in Canada. We will ask Elliot Freeman more about that tomorrow when he joins our program at 1 o'clock. But I heard that report, Nick, and I found it to be quite interesting. So Elliot Freeman says that the Nashville Predators are treating Ryan O'Reilly, who does not have any sort of trade protection in his contract, as if though he does have trade protection in his contract. And fortunately for all of us, Barry Trotz was on this station yesterday during his weekly interview with Jared Stillman, and Jared asked Barry Trotz about this report. This is what Barry Trotz said.
No, I haven't had I know I'm going to get asked about Ryan O'Reilly. I think what he brings to our franchise is what every team wants. And, I brought Ryan here for a reason. Wanted to continue with the culture that we had and try to improve on it even better. He's done everything I've asked. He's, you know, he's a guy that we said, you know, we want to transition. We felt we had a little bit of a window, want to transition to some of the younger guys. Anytime you have a Ryan O'Reilly in your club, that always helps the younger guys as well. So, he doesn't have trade protection, but it would have to be something that would knock my socks off for me to do something, and I'd have to get a pretty good player back if I were to do something. I think out of respect to Ryan, because I really respect him as a person and a player, that I, you know, if I was to do anything, I would probably talk to him first.
That was Barry Trotz yesterday with Jared Stillman live at Bridgestone Arena. He went on to say, Nick, that he will do what's in the best interest of the Nashville Predators. And I liked hearing that, because I will tell you what my initial reaction to Elliot Friedman's report was. I didn't like it.
Really?
I did not like the idea that the Predators were treating Ryan O'Reilly like he has trade protection in his contract. I often play out worst-case scenarios in my head. I'm cynical that way.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah, right? So here is what I thought when I heard that. Let's say a team is desperate for a center. They want a proven winner. And they are willing to overpay for Ryan O'Reilly. And that team were to call Barry Trotz and tell him all of those things. Barry Trotz says, let me talk to Ryan. He takes that trade to Ryan. And Ryan says, I don't want to go there. Are the Predators going to turn down this great offer? That's how I felt when I heard the report at the time. I feel better about it after hearing what Barry Trotz said yesterday. Mm. But I'm also unsure of what Ryan O'Reilly's market value is. He'll be 34 on the day of the trade deadline, which is March 7th. He turns 34 in February. He has 2 years remaining on his contract with a $4.5 million cap hit. I can't think of a recent trade of a player with those particulars. This feels more like an off-season trade than a trade deadline trade. But there are a lot of different ways we can discuss this. We'll start with this. I told you how I felt when I heard that.
Right.
My reaction was, I don't like it. Mm. I don't like the idea that the Predators could potentially lose out on a great deal if Ryan O'Reilly does not want to go to the team offering that great deal. And again, maybe I'm going full on doomsday scenario. But what do you make of that report, what Barry Trotz had to say, and what you think Ryan O'Reilly's value is on the trade market? Because quite frankly, I don't know what his value is on the trade market.
It's a great question. And I think that will lie in and within some other organizations. You know, reporters can inquire about that. That would be something interesting to know about Adam. So maybe that'll be thrown out there. Not as a shameless plug me saying it now, but that might be something good to do some digging on. But I think with a centerman like him, and Barry went ad nauseum about this after signing him, was he is more of an invaluable guy you add for culture. He's a guy you bring in because he's a serial winner, right? So I think when I heard that report initially, and I was in the luxurious press room with everybody looking at the TV, and it was cut off, and it said, Nashville Predators considering, and we couldn't read the bottom half, so we had no idea initially what was being said about Ryan O'Reilly until the video came out on X. But I think after hearing what Elliot had to say, friend of the show on DVD, like Adam said, listen on Thursdays at 1 o'clock, he's phenomenal. But I think that with that intention to treat him like he has a no movement clause, I think that's a mistake.
I agree.
I think it is a mistake, because if you were to get something sizable for him, and Barry said, knock my socks off. And
yes.
Yeah, absolutely. You want to have your socks knocked off with most trades. But in this case, I think the way Barry sees it is, how does he feel about David Edstrom? How does he feel about Matthew Wood? How does he feel about some of the prospects in the next few seasons?
Right, because this team has issues at center.
Yeah.
And if you trade Ryan O'Reilly, you're creating another hole at center. And so that's another part of this as well.
And I think the other thing my mind immediately goes to is not only the longevity of the player himself, but also those prospects learning the ropes. I saw a lot at training camp of Fedor Svechkov hanging out with Ryan O'Reilly on the ice, asking him questions, pushing him in drills. But I also see Ryan O'Reilly set the tone for what it needs to be for guys to put in their work, whether it's an optional morning skate, a practice, or probably working out too. We don't have access to that, but I am sure that he sets the tone in more ways than one. So if you are to do something like that, it has to be for something massive. I think Barry would have to package things, and a team that is interested will have to package something to give to the Predators. And like we alluded to last segment, Adam, I think it's interesting that he wants a little bit of term coming back. So who or what are some centermen that have 2 or 3 years on their deal that could possibly be on the market? I think that is one way to look at it, because if you could in turn tell a contender, okay, you want Ryan O'Reilly, but how about X player here that is younger, that has a couple of years left? How would you feel about moving off of someone like that for you to be in a win now mode? That might be something that is a possibility here as we get close to the Four Nations and then also the trade deadline that follows that as well.
I think it helps to be a little ruthless in this situation. And there are two players on this team that are on this team because their previous organizations were willing to be a little ruthless. Steven Stamkos and Jonathan Marchessault. We heard from Jonathan Marchessault after he signed as a free agent with the Predators. He expected to be back with the Golden Knights. And he did a good job of downplaying the importance of last night's game before the game. But you knew it meant a lot to him. It's different when your old team comes to visit you versus when you go to visit your old team. So it will be different when Marchessault goes to Vegas later this season. But we all know that it meant a lot to him. The Vegas Golden Knights, for as long as they've been a franchise, it's a hallmark, that ruthlessness. I remember with Marc-Andre Fleury, who was the original face of that franchise, when they didn't have use for him anymore, they let him go. And there are other examples of that. The Vegas Golden Knights, as you saw last night and have seen this season, they're not hurting without Jonathan Marchessault. I know they lost last night, but they are one of the best teams in the league. The Tampa Bay Lightning have not struggled without Steven Stamkos. They have 4 20-goal scorers on their roster already, halfway through the season. They're not hurting without Steven Stamkos. So I think it pays to be a little ruthless. And that was my issue with the trade report initially. The way that I interpreted it was Ryan O'Reilly has the say here. Even if the Predators get an offer that, as Barry Trotz said, knocks his socks off, O'Reilly has the final say in this. At least that's how it was presented. But after hearing Barry Trotz, I don't feel as much that way, which is good. You're not going to get for Ryan O'Reilly what the Blues got for Ryan O'Reilly a few years ago. It was a 3-team trade, St. Louis, Minnesota, and Toronto, because Minnesota helped retain some of the salary. But the Blues ended up with a first-round pick, a second-round pick, and a third-round pick, among other things. You're not getting that for Ryan O'Reilly now. I don't know what his value is. I can't think of a recent trade that I can view as a blueprint. But there are issues on both ends. As you alluded to, Nick, the center depth of this team has been an issue. And if you trade Ryan O'Reilly, it's an even bigger issue.
It absolutely is.
So I'm intrigued by all of this. I know that the trade deadline is about a month and a half away. So there's a lot that can happen between now and then. I would love to know what teams are willing to pay for Ryan O'Reilly. As we saw when the Predators signed Ryan O'Reilly in free agency, teams are willing to overpay for leadership. And Ryan O'Reilly has that in spades. So a team, even if Ryan O'Reilly is not the player he once was, and he's still an effective player, teams value his leadership, his winning pedigree, his ability to play in all situations, I can completely understand why teams would want Ryan O'Reilly. I would just be fascinated by what that value is because I have no idea.
I think one way I could look at it is if the Predators were to put him on the market, and this could be my final thought on this matter, is like I said, they need a roster player coming back. It needs to be somebody that has a couple years left on his contract. If I'm the general manager, just being armchair GM here, I'd want to look at someone more so that has a 3-year contract, because then it's two next year. Wouldn't want a 2-year deal unless I knew I could possibly get an extension done, maybe have a familiar agent that's involved with that as well. You don't always look for that type of thing, but it definitely helps. So that's something that I would look at, Adam. But in terms of what Nashville could get for him, want to do some more research. But I personally think if there's any draft picks involved, I don't think any firsts are involved. Maybe Nashville, if they have any firsts involved, maybe they flip one of their firsts for another first in that deal. I don't know. I think I see a lot more of a second and third round pick value being involved here, not a first round whatsoever. So we'll see how it all pans out. The trade deadline's not for a while, but it's interesting too. Elliot has talked about how with the Four Nations coming up, it might prompt some GMs to get some moves done prior to that. So not exactly sure when and if that's going to heat up. Barry even said on Stillman & Company that he feels like trades are going to start falling and some calls are going to be made here in the next week or so because they just got out of their winter meetings. So we'll see how it all plays out. But in my mind, I do see Ryan O'Reilly with this team throughout the rest of the season.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Saturday, Zachary LaRue needs to be looking over his shoulder because the Minnesota Wild are going after him on sight. We'll discuss that next. Adam Mingan, Nick Keezer. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Mingan and Nick Keezer with you here on a Wednesday evening. The Nashville Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks. But after that game, Nick, the next game, Saturday, against the Minnesota Wild, that has the potential to get awful spicy.
Yes, it does.
Because this is the first time that these two teams will meet since New Year's Eve, when Zachary LaRue slew-footed Jared Spurgeon, earning himself a 3-game suspension, and Spurgeon has been out of the lineup since that game.
Yep.
I believe 2 to 3 weeks was the timeline the Wild gave a few days later.
Mm-hmm.
So Spurgeon is not expected to play on Saturday against the Minnesota Wild. But we know in the NHL, it's about frontier justice. And although Zachary LaRue was suspended for 3 games for slew-footing Jared Spurgeon, that's not enough for the Minnesota Wild, who have been without their captain for the past few weeks. And, of course, Zachary LaRue already back in the lineup. So Marcus Foligno had these comments to Mike Russo of The Athletic. Quote, slew-footing in a lot of sports is a crappy play. But it wasn't the word crappy. It was another word that's similar that begins with an S. I don't know. Maybe in UFC you could do it. When a guy crosses the line in that sense, something has to be taken in measures. Yeah, he got suspended, but we lost Spurgeon. It's a dirty play. It should be more games. He shouldn't be able to just walk out of XL Energy Center that night because Spurgeon wasn't able to. Sounds like a pro wrestling promo, which is right up my alley. Foligno continues, when you see a guy cheap shotted, that stuff needs to be answered for. The LaRue thing is blatant, trying to hurt a guy. We got into the board so many times with D-men, you just guide them in. It's not the 80s or 90s where you can get away with anything on the forecheck. They've got a lot of guys on Nashville that understand the code, and the young kid doesn't understand. It's frustrating. There will be a price to pay for that game. I'm sure he'll have to answer to someone.
Dun, dun, dun.
End quote. So I imagine on Saturday night, if you're going to the game, watch warm-ups.
Yep.
Keep your eye on Zachary LaRue, because there are going to be multiple Minnesota Wild players. Marcus Foligno is one of the toughest customers in the NHL.
Without a doubt.
And they've got other heavyweights on that team. They are going to be plenty of guys jawing with Zachary LaRue. I imagine there is a fight within that Wild dressing room to be the one to fight Zachary LaRue. My money would be on Marcus Foligno. But watch warmups, because the Wild players, as soon as they see Zachary LaRue, it's on site.
Oh, yeah.
So, Nick, after Zachary LaRue came back from suspension, what did he say about that play?
Yeah, it was interesting. And I actually had a conversation with him earlier. I think it was the end of last week. Yeah. And it was before they played the Capitol. So, yes, he was still out. But anyway, so when I was in the Preds locker room at Centennial, I had asked him more, and I want to preface with this because I'll answer your question, but what he initially told me, what I started my conversation out with, was, did you reach out to Jared Spurgeon? I had not seen that. I didn't see if anybody had asked him about that yet, but he did immediately after the game get his number and shoot him a message. However, he did not say if Jared Spurgeon texted him back. So that might be, you know, foreshadowing that, hey, we have some beef. We will settle this on the ice when and if I see you next game. And obviously he probably won't see him, but his teammates will answer for him. What Zach kind of talked about to me was the suspension was him taking his medicine yet again, is what he told me. And so I know, based off of his history, being suspended 11 times before his NHL career, that's indicative of a personality that has to be controlled. And Andrew Burnett called him reckless before I had a conversation with Zach, and it was definitely an uncalled for play. And I remember that night when it happened, Adam, and me being a former defenseman myself can understand the situation at hand. And I have been slew-footed before, but not to the magnitude of what Spurgeon was. And what I can tell our listener tonight is, when you are going to the wall for a puck and you are more than 5 feet away from the wall, you and do not in any way need to be sweeping away at someone's feet. You don't need to be pushing them before they get to the wall. Like what Marcus said in that quote in The Athletic is, you don't want to kill someone. It's not the 80s. You don't want to just ram somebody. You want to ease somebody in for contact. It can still be hard. It can still be an effective play, because Spurgeon ended up not even having the puck, and then Yakov Trenin went right after him.
Another player,
himself,
by the way.
Oh,
another player who is unafraid,
yes,
to drop the gloves.
It's going
to
be pay-per-view.
He went toe-to-toe with Zdeno Chara,
uh-huh,
on multiple occasions.
And got him in right in the chin, too. So
he's not afraid.
He's a tough customer for sure. But I think going back to that play, it's interesting that, in my opinion, and you can disagree, but I think it was not completely ill will whatsoever by Zach. I think it was a mistake, the way that he wanted to play the puck there, for sure. And I think the way he's going to go about it from now on is he's not going to be any different grit wise. And I talked to him post game when he came back too, and he told me that he had to kind of ease himself back into play. He was going to get physical yet again. He's gotten comfortable at this level. So I don't really see an issue with him playing the Wild, but you're right. Keep an eye on him at warmups. Keep an eye on him when they have the starting lineup. I will be very interested to see if Andrew Burnett puts him on the starting lineup and just gets it over with. Personally,
That's what I think is going to happen. Andrew Burnett is going to put Zachary LaRue in the starting lineup, put his line on the ice. John Hines is going to put Marcus Foligno on the ice. And as soon as the puck hits the ice for the opening faceoff, gloves off. Just get it out of the way.
All right, yeah. Do you think coaches talk about this before the game, by the way?
Among each other?
Yeah, do you think so?
Probably not. I can't imagine that, but they know. Like, they're John Hines and Andrew Burnett are not going to have a conversation before the game and say, hey, I'm going to start LaRue if you want to start Foligno. But they know. They know they've been in this game long enough. They know that this is what is going to happen, what probably needs to happen, and they'll just take care of it. Now, maybe that's not enough. Maybe some other Wild players are licking their chops and one fight won't be enough. But I do think that Zachary LaRue is going to have to answer for what he did. And when the NHL suspended Zachary Leroux, they mentioned that the proximity to the boards, as you were talking about, the proximity to the boards and the speed in which the players were traveling at the play, during the play that led to the slew foot and the injury, those played a big factor in the league's decision. So Leroux has run afoul of the law in other leagues. As you mentioned, 9 times suspended in junior hockey, 2 in the American Hockey League. Now, I remember asking this to Elliot Freeman when he was on our show a couple of weeks ago, that although the NHL does not factor in suspensions in other leagues into their decision, we're all human. So the people who made that decision know what Zachary Leroux's history is outside of the NHL. So although when they decided on 3 games, the rationale wasn't, well, he was suspended 11 times before he made it to the NHL. We all knew that. We all thought that when it happened. So I'm sure his history played a small part in it. I don't think it was the impetus for the decision. Because when it was announced as 3 games, honestly, I was a little surprised. I thought it might be 1 or 2, because he was thrown out of the game. But the injury to Spurgeon ultimately didn't help him. But since he's been back in the lineup, Nick, have you noticed any changes to the way that he's approaching his game so that he doesn't put himself in that position again?
I think there is a safer way that he's gone about his game. Like I said, he talked to me after his first game back. Kind of a surprise interview for me in the moment, by the way. But I still got the job done. But he was interested to kind of shed some light on his play. And like I said, he kind of had to get his style back a little bit. He didn't want to just throw himself into people like he typically does. And, you know, even against Vegas, I thought he did a pretty good job of managing his speed. And also, I noticed a little bit more of him taking a glance before he takes a hit, more so with the timing than the intent. So I think with him and that play, and I'm sure he would want to redo if he goes back to Minnesota and has that happen 100%, because 9 times out of 10 in the NHL now, we don't see a young forward make that dumb of a mistake, if you ask me. Now, given he's young and he's going to learn from his major gaffes for sure. So, I mean, he is going to have to adjust. I think the way that he does it is just with confidence, knowing that he was pretty good up until that point. That incident was really a rarity so far in his 30-plus game NHL career this season. So I think for him, it's going to be about just, hey, I've got the confidence. I've been around here, and I know that in my first season that was a big mistake, and I have to go back to the player that I was becoming right when I got called up, because he had a lot of confidence. He's always had that, right? He had it with the Mooseheads. He had it, you know, even as a younger guy in Moncton before he got traded to Halifax. I talked to him about always having confidence growing up. And so I think for him, it's just about getting back to the player that he knows that he is. And quite frankly, he can be pretty effective on the 3rd and 4th line. So I'm interested to see how they go about dressing that starting lineup. I think early speculation for me on this part is putting Justin Barron in the starting lineup. That's a friend of his. That I know always has his back, bigger guy for sure. Obviously, I think Colton Sissons and Michael McCarron would be easily the guys I would pair with him personally. So we'll see what the Predators do. But Adam, I think that at the end of the day with Zachary Leroux, it's a big mistake. He's going to learn from it. He needs to play with confidence, because if he doesn't, he'll be a shell of himself, and that's not what Nashville's asked him to be long term.
As I said, keep an eye on warm-ups on Saturday night if you're going to the game. That will be the game within the game. Should be entertaining. Wild and Predators on Saturday. Coming up next, there is a game before that. Thursday night against the Chicago Blackhawks. A special night for the Nashville Predators. We'll discuss that next. Adam Mingan in with Nick Kieser tonight. This is Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Mingan here with Nick Kieser. This Wednesday evening, the Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks at home. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Game 3 of this 5-game homestand. The Predators host the Minnesota Wild on Saturday. And Yaroslav Askarov and the San Jose Sharks come to town on Tuesday. That could be a fun one. But before the game tomorrow night, Nick, the Predators will honor Shea Weber, Pecorine, and David Poile, the inaugural class of the Preds Golden Hall. The plan is to induct new members on a yearly basis. And of course, when you think of the Nashville Predators and players and executives who deserve this honor, Shea Weber, Pecorine, and David Poile are 1, 2, and 3 in some order. They were honored at a fundraising lunch earlier today in downtown Nashville. And tomorrow night will be the induction night. The Predators will enshrine the inductees into a new Golden Hall display on one of Bridgestone Arena's concourses, where Poile, Rene, and Weber, and any future Predators Golden Hall members will be permanently recognized in bowl at Bridgestone Arena. So when I think of the contributions of those three men to this organization, it's really hard to put it into words. You know, I had the pleasure of covering all three of them as a reporter for the Tennessean and the Athletic. Pecorine, of course, enshrined outside the arena, a statue of Pecorine. I wonder what it's like for him every time he walks by it.
I don't know. Yeah.
Kind of strange.
I think he feels a little awkward whenever
probably
he sees it.
Pecorine, yeah. As humble gets. So I'm sure, you know, talking to him about it, I imagine he'd be, a little sheepish about it, if that's the right word. But well, I want to talk about Shea Weber for a moment. Because Shea Weber, of course, more than 8 years ago, which is just hard to believe, was traded from Nashville to Montreal for P.K. Subban in one of the biggest blockbuster trades in recent NHL history.
I was junior in high school, Adam.
God. Sorry. Geez.
I like to age you whenever I get the chance.
And I'm not even that old, but
yep.
Compared to you, I'm ancient. I remember that day vividly. I'll tell you another day I remember vividly. Shea Weber's final game as a member of the Nashville Predators in San Jose, that would have been game 7 of the second round in the 2015-16 season. Predators lose, I want to say it was 5-0 in that game. They were eliminated from the playoffs. That's the furthest they had ever been in the playoffs up until that point. Of course, the following year, they went to the Stanley Cup final. And Shea Weber and Roman Josi had a rough game that night. Speaking of Pecorine, that is the angriest I've ever seen Pecorine.
I was going to say, yeah.
Smashing his stick, you know, splintering it on the post and throwing it into the end boards. Carter Hutton finished that game for the Predators. But after that game in the dressing room, you know, Shea Weber he wasn't bawling his eyes out, but he was teary-eyed. He knew how close they had gotten to, well, let me rephrase that, because they were still two rounds short of the Stanley
Cup
final.
Exactly.
But it was the furthest he had ever been
in
the postseason as a member of the Nashville Predators. He did not play well. And I remember just, I didn't think that Shea Weber could cry. And I'm not saying he was bawling his eyes out, but you could tell that he was incredibly upset by not only the team's performance, but more importantly, his performance in that game. And it was, you know, it left a sour taste in his mouth. And unfortunately for him, he wasn't able to redeem himself in Nashville because he was traded that summer. But I remember when the Canadiens named him captain, and I thought to myself, there is no better person to be captain of the Montreal Canadiens than Shea Weber. When you consider, you know, the respect he had around the league and the type of player that he is, he looked right in that Canadiens uniform, especially with the C on it. But Willie Donick has made this point quite a bit. Earlier this season, after he was inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame, Shea Weber was here along with David Poile, who was also inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame. And they had a moment at center ice. And I thought it was great that Predators fans were able to give Shea Weber an extended standing ovation. He had the moment when he came back with Montreal, which was incredibly emotional. But that one moment, and speaking of people who are uncomfortable with attention, Shea Weber, number one with a bullet on that list. But I thought it was really, good that Shea Weber was able to have that moment with Predators fans, because I know it didn't end well here, but he is such an incredibly important part of this franchise's lore. So I think it was great that he had the opportunity to be honored, and will have another opportunity to be honored on Thursday. So I'm glad to see Shea Weber kind of getting back into the organization's, I don't want to say good graces, but it's good to see him sort of getting back into the organization a little bit.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And Alex Doherty, our friend of ours with the Tennessean, threw out a story this morning, even talking about his future. And I was the one that actually asked him about that when he was here, you know, after being inducted into the Hockey Hall of Fame in Toronto. Like you said, Nashville honored him. And remember just briefly asking the question, Shea, what's next for you after hockey, if you've thought about it? And, you know, he doesn't know, but, you know, he gave you that typical, you know, really quick answer. Yeah, you know, I'll think about it when the time comes. So we'll see what he ends up doing. Could it be with the Predators? Could he be a Western Canadian scout? I don't know. I think that would be a great fit for him if he wanted to be involved in some way, shape, or form, Adam. So we'll see if he does what Pecorine is doing currently, a little bit kind of like that. So, but they are very deserving of that, and it was a pleasure to actually be there for that event. So looking forward to seeing all the familiar faces that are involved from over the years with their great careers. So we'll see how they handle it. I know that, like you said, they're very sheepish men when they react to getting attention. So we'll see how they handle it when they are honored prior to puck drop against the Blackhawks. So, but Adam, glad that you got to cover them. I got to watch them kind of growing up a little bit around here. So they're very, very big figures, and they are very deserving of it. So glad that the Predators chose those three to kick things off.
And it will be interesting to see who joins them in the Golden Hall as the years progress. But that's a topic for another day. Nick, always a pleasure to talk hockey with you, my friend. Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the Chicago Blackhawks. Puck drop at 7, pregame at 6, of course, right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. For Nick Kieser, I'm Adam Bingen. You're listening to Preds Insiders 102.5, 106.3 The Game.